First, a quick message from our sponsors. Elm Coffee Roasters open in Pioneer Square in South Lake Union for takeout and soon indoor seating. Order coffee and more at elmcoffeeroasters.com. If you're looking for a place to live in the fall with student-friendly amenities, spectacular views, and that's walking distance to campus, check out The M Seattle. They are the only student living high-rise near UW, and they've recently dropped the rates on all their floor plans. Visit themseattle.com for more info. Hello, welcome to A More Perfect Union. My name is Simon Schumacher, and I am so excited to have you with me. Now, I thought for our last episode together that I'd indulge myself and do my best to make a pitch for my own brand of politics. Maybe move a small number of people on the margins just a little bit. Now, it would not be a surprise to say that I'm a liberal, as anyone knows that there are an infinite number of identities that go into that term, and in fact, there are an infinite number of identities that overlap with that term. You know, a liberal can look a lot like a social democrat, or a social liberal, as some people say, or modern liberal, or even a little c conservative. Fortunately, in many ways, these terms mean the same thing. They operate from some shared values of who deserves to be taken care of. And there's probably many very smart political science students that could give you a nuanced understanding of what it exactly means to be a liberal, delve into a perfect synthesis of the political and the social and the economic spheres of liberalism to articulate the theses of John Stuart Mill and John Locke and Adam Smith and tell us what exactly it means to be a liberal in all the ways that I'm probably wrong about my understanding. But fortunately, I'm not going to speak to that. I'm going to speak to what it means for me to be a liberal. And first off, I would say that in many ways, being a liberal means the exact same thing as being an American progressive or an American democratic socialist. Maybe there is some differences in belief about how effective this kind of government regulation is. I've heard some people make the distinction between liberals and progressives, that liberals like to throw money at problems, whereas progressives try to fix it. Okay, not necessarily flattering, but, you know, I'm not going to be too offended. But if I had to define liberalism to me in one sentence, it would be that our society is comprised of imperfect individuals who are motivated by a synthesis of inward-facing and outward-facing interests. They're self-interest, not necessarily selfish, not necessarily selfless, and that nothing matters more than the well-being of every individual, that no one is sacrificed or compromised for some larger group identity, that society is not broken down into family units, it's not broken down into demographic units, that your people is all people, and not just a fraction of society. A liberal democracy is at worst, a negotiation of all the special interests in society. And at best, it's all those special interests coming together to not pursue their own interests, but the general interest and the many different institutions that come along with that. And I think the show has taught me just how easy it is for me to play a politics on the margins. It's fun and easy to argue about all the things that this group's doing wrong and all the things that we would do if we were in power. And that's relevant if all your politics is pursuit of healthcare and immigration, it's taxation and criminal justice, and that is certainly noble. But I think an endeavor worth just as much is understanding the philosophies that underpin it, the worldview and values, the note card explanation of politics that we subconsciously or consciously look towards to inform what it is we support, what it is we like, and what it is we don't. So I'm going to do my best to articulate my own political philosophy. And if I had to dumb it down, I would say that politics and governance is a math equation. It's a very complicated math equation, one that requires many different assumptions and compromises and gut feelings. But no surprise, it's a game of maximizing the utility of all individuals in society. Now, that's a very complicated endeavor, and people are not very good at that. But I think it's important to recognize at least what I view as the end, as the ends, and not the means. And the end is the welfare of all people. And I think we have a number of fortunate tools on our side in that pursuit. The first is the concept of diminishing returns. It's no surprise that the first Snickers bar I gave you, if you like it, you're going to enjoy a hell of a lot more than the 10th one I give you. And that applies to most things in life, virtually all things in life. The first $100,000 that you earn is going to be worth a hell of a lot more than the second or the third or the fourth. The first one you spend on the down payment on your house. The second, maybe you spend on a summer trip to Tijuana. And the fourth one you spend on a luxury car and a designer handbag. And no shame in those endeavors. But I promise you, if you had to pick between the house and the bag, I have my guess where your dollars would go, and I think you do too. So our first ally in this pursuit of this math equation is diminishing returns, that it's better to spread out resources and wealth and consumption, all of the things being equal. And the second tool in our toolbox for pursuing this math equation are individuals themselves. Nobody knows what's best for you better than you do. Nobody knows what your tastes are. Nobody knows what kind of life you want to live other than you. And fortunately for policymakers, they're not responsible for picking out where you want to live. They're not responsible for choosing which color car you want to drive. And they're not responsible for deciding your economic life, because you are so much of a better agent in that pursuit. But here's where maybe modern liberals diverge from their more classical counterparts. There is some basket of goods and services, and it's one that I constantly reference. Housing, education, healthcare, food. Items that are not promised by our Constitution, are not guaranteed by Adam Smith or John Locke, but ones that we have slowly been realizing, and too slowly, that all people require. And what sets us apart from our conservative and our classical counterparts is that I think modern liberals astutely say that a system that does not ensure that those goods are accessible is a system that is failing. Maybe not a system that needs to be torn down, but one that needs to be reformed. And the hope and optimism that these classical liberals shared is almost idyllic. But it was just that, optimism and hope. And one that was not fully realized, at least not yet. Let's take a quick moment to hear from our sponsors. Open since 2015, Elm Coffee Roasters is devoted to high-quality coffee that's easy to brew at home and a joy to drink. At their roastery and cafe in Pioneer Square, Seattle, Elm obsessively roasts small batches of coffee that they source with a focus on sustainable practices that lift up the whole supply chain and protect the future of the coffee plant. Elm's goal is to make a truly exceptional cup of coffee and experience you look forward to every day. Cafes in Pioneer Square and South Lake Union open now for takeout and soon dine-in service. Please use code PODCAST at elmcoffeeroasters.com for 15% off your next coffee order. Let's get back to the show. And so I return us back to this math equation that says that consumption by one is not favorable to consumption by many, that we should encourage people to accumulate wealth and income only as long as it benefits everyone else. And when they accumulate that wealth and that income, it is entirely subject to a taxation system that is fair and is just, that's reliable and as free from corruption and cronyism as possible, but is there and is not insignificant. But that might be my economic philosophy, and I think that that is a complex game to play. It requires an understanding of how people work, who can deliver it to them, and what should be delivered. And we think of political and social philosophy, it becomes, I think, easier. I'm an econ major, so maybe it's more complicated than I think it is, but as far as the lives that people want to live, the people they want to interact with, I think is a pretty uncontroversial statement to say that government has no role to play in our social relationships. Everything from, obviously, who we want to marry, to our gender and sexual identities, the way we want to dress, the people we want to hang out with, and in many cases, what we want to do in our free time. And yes, I am talking about the consumption of otherwise illicit drugs. That's a debate I will have another day, one that I am eager to have, but I don't necessarily want to die on any hills for the legalization of otherwise illicit drugs. And as far as our political systems, I think liberalism has a lot to say on that, but hopefully it's an uncontroversial statement. That institutions that promote discourse and dialogue, that protect free speech, that even encourage in our academic institutions arguments, institutions that encourage free speech and that protect the rights of minorities. And the most important minority protection is just that, the right to redress, the right to protest, but also a political liberalism, again, at its core, at its worst, is a system where special interests come together to hash it out, where power is fought for the ballot and not by the bullet, and where the losers in any given election or referendum or democratic activity of any sort agree to respect the results for some protections. And again, when they're a political minority, those protections are free speech and all the other rights associated with the First Amendment, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly. What we see in, you know, admittedly small, well-off countries in Northern and Western Europe, in East Asia, is that democracy can truly mend a devolved society towards a sense of common interests, of general interest, that democracy at its best brings a society together to ask questions, not what's best for me or what's best for my neighbors or what's best for people with shared experiences, but maybe what do my experiences and understandings say about how we can have a society that's best for everyone? No one suggests that we shirk our identities at the ballot box, but we use them to inform what needs fixing and what doesn't. And that's the beauty of democracy, is that it has the capacity to bring people together. It has the capacity to, for the first time in human history, shirk our special interests and identities and build a political empathy that has, every now and again, done something remarkable to change power structures and political systems for the better. And so that is my ideology, my philosophy, if you will, and I try to take a humble approach when it comes to policy making. I took one public policy class, and that was enough for me to know just how complicated this endeavor was. And so I'm not going to preach to you about what policies the United States should or should not adopt. I have things that I'm particularly passionate about. Maybe I might indulge myself a little bit and say, I want a criminal justice system that does not convict people for a crime against themselves, and one that is almost solely a system that rehabilitates, that at no point is your humanity lost, and one that does not financially benefit from the incarceration of anybody, and one that does not reflect our history of racism and bigotry in our most delicate and dangerous institution. I want to see a United States that finally realizes a 70-year dream, 100-year dream, started by Teddy Roosevelt and fought for by every Democrat that followed him, to finally see an America that has access to universal and affordable health care. I want to see a United States that upholds human rights, that holds itself accountable, and that works with partners and alliances across the world to ensure that the post-World War II age of genocide and ethnic cleansing finally, once and for all, comes to an end. And finally, I want to see a United States that embraces our cultural and political identity as the homeland for all oppressed people. America is an immigrant country, and I understand the history with which that is said. And I don't mean to romanticize what being an immigrant country meant 400 years ago, but I want to romanticize what it means to be one today. So I've shared with you my philosophy, and I have a lifetime to grow. I know that 6 months from now, I'm going to look back and say, wow, not that I was stupid, not that I was incredibly wrong, hopefully, but I never thought about it that way. You know, every day I learn something new about politics. I look at things differently. I'm able to answer a question that much more concisely with that much less bullshit. I think that's the real struggle of politics, is to talk a little more sincerely today than you did yesterday, and to have a more authentic understanding of what this political discourse is tomorrow than I did today. So I want to thank you for coming on this journey with me, for entertaining these conversations, and again, thank you so much for tuning in.